Welcome to the Vitality Vision podcast. I'm your host, Greg Bennett. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Barry Miller and David Vogel. And this episode, we travel up to Boston to Whoop headquarters to interview the Chief Product Officer, Ed Baker. And what an incredible episode this one was, with Ed's journey from Facebook to Uber to an angel investor and even our time working together at AnyQuestion, which is the company that Whoop acquired. It's just an absolutely incredible story of understanding what kind of features can really change the tech world. And Ed's been at the frontier for such a long time. So many great stories in this one. You don't want to miss it. Thanks again for making this happen, mate. This is really cool for us to be up here, giving us a tour of the Whoop studio and everything. Yeah, this is really amazing.
Awesome to have you all up here.
Yeah.
I always like it when you come visit Boston.
Yeah, I know. We missed our morning run, unfortunately.
I know. Next time.
But yeah. What I want to do is, just so our listeners and audience can understand, is like rewind the clock. Yeah. You know, it's my favorite way of doing this, is like rewind the clock and take us back. You know, we're sitting with you here as the Chief Product Officer at Whoop, which is amazing. You have a big team under you, and what you're doing at Whoop is really significant. And people that haven't seen, you know, Whoop is now a $10.1 billion valuation on its last raise, which
Congrats
is absolutely incredible.
Thank you. Yeah.
Incredible. I know you've played a massive hand in that, so well done. But what I want to do is just, how do we get here? And so you've got quite the journey. I'd love kind of like a high level recap and some of the key learnings that you've had, you know, in your journey from when this all started out.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Where would you like me to start?
Out of diapers.
Born in Seattle. No.
Well, look, I think, you know, your story, you know, Harvard grad, Stanford MBA, you know, incredible. And then, you know, I think for me, when the story gets really exciting is friend.ly.
That's right.
And so you go on. I know your story well. But
okay. You know my story. And you're a part of that story, an important part. So we can get into that too. I guess maybe I'll just quickly share one anecdote, story from Harvard, which is I built my very first website back when I was a sophomore at Harvard, 1999, dating myself. I've got my 25th reunion coming up next month. But it was a dating site where you could put in email addresses of people you had crushes on. They'd get an email saying somebody likes you. You'd have to go to datesite.com, put in email addresses of people you had crushes on, and if there was a match, we'd let both people know. And this was back in 1999 when the internet was just getting started. When people actually read emails that said somebody has a crush on you and they believed it and they clicked on the link.
Not spam.
Exactly. But what was fascinating was we launched that. I built it with my roommates. We launched it on Valentine's Day of 1999. And within 1 week, a quarter of all of the students at Harvard had signed up for it.
Wow.
So we just saw this massive viral growth on campus. The next university we launched at was MIT, actually. Same thing. It was even more viral at MIT. So I don't know if it says something about Harvard and MIT students, you know, all wanting to play this crush game. But I was studying physics at the time, and I was intrigued by the math behind that viral growth. Mm-hmm. And what I realized was there's actually a formula you can use to calculate that viral coefficient, or what we call the K factor today, and actually know if something is viral or not. Mm-hmm. You know, if the K factor is above 1, you see exponential growth. If it's below 1, you don't see anything. Mm-hmm. It's actually the same thing that, you know, during COVID, they calculated the R naught, mm-hmm. which is really the same thing. If it's above 1, you get, you know, exponential growth and you have a pandemic. And if it's below 1, you don't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was 25 years ago. But I still use kind of that same framework today in all of the companies I've worked at. When we're trying to drive more growth, we kind of measure the growth in that way.
I remember you told me once that you can have an ideal K factor. Tell me if I'm wrong. It was like 1.2, but if you go 1.8 or 2, right. You're like, it's too much.
You hardly ever see anything as high as 2.
Yeah.
You know, like Friendly, which you were bringing up, that's the startup I started after Stanford Business School. We had a K factor of like 1.4, and that grew to, I think, 25 million registered users over about a 12-month period. So you don't have to be that much more than 1, because like a 1.4 basically means 40% growth and the typical cycle time was 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So every day you're compounding 40% growth. So 1.4 sounds like, oh, it's close to one, but no, it's like every day growing at 40%, yeah. That starts to get big really quickly.
Yeah, you've probably seen
if you had a penny and you compounded every day for a month, you get $1 billion
exactly.
Or something
like
that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah. And you've probably seen in the news recently, there was a company that just did a matchmaking type of structure or offering for college students as well. Did you see that recently?
I actually didn't see that story.
I'll find it.
I'd
and
love
send
to see
it to
that.
You.
Yeah.
It was. It probably.
Well, I mean, some ideas.
You.
It's funny. I feel like I've seen this now several times. Like the same idea will work a decade later or two decades later. I mean,
timing matters.
Yeah. But there's certain things that are just kind of human nature, and whether you do it now or, something that worked 25 years ago might actually work better today.
Mm-hmm. No, I get it.
Yeah.
All right, let's do this.
Yeah.
Friendly.
Sorry, that was
No, that was great. That was a good background into
your story.
Setting.
But yeah, to quickly take you through the rest, Friendly, that was actually a social discovery site, we called it, but it was really another dating site in disguise. Grew to 25 million users. We ended up selling that to Facebook back in 2011. Mm-hmm. And the reason Mark Zuckerberg decided to acquire us was he wanted to put me in charge of international growth so that I could apply these growth tactics to helping Facebook grow in other parts of the world.
Wow.
So I was there for a couple of years running the international growth team, learned a ton while I was there. We crossed 1 billion monthly active users during that time.
Wow. First company ever, right, to hit that kind of a number.
I think, in terms of that type of site. I don't know about what Google's numbers were.
Yeah, well, Google's a little different.
That's true. That's in true. Terms of like a consumer website where people were signed up and registered, I think it was. And we went through the IPO during my time there as well. And then shortly after that, I left Facebook to join Uber, back when Uber was still a pretty small startup.
Was it called Uber Cabs when you joined it?
They'd gotten rid of the cabs, but yeah. it was about 100 people in their downtown San Francisco office. Mm-hmm. Travis, who was their founder and CEO, was someone I had known before he started Uber, and he convinced me to come start up the growth team there. So I did that and ended up running the product team as well, and spent 4 years at Uber.
So you saw quite a hyper growth in that period.
It was the most crazy hyper growth I've ever seen for those 4 years. Not just in terms of like how many trips were happening around the world. Mm. When I started, it was a fairly small black car business in a few cities, mostly in the US. And by the time I left, it was literally all over the world, UberX, kind of.
I want you to share the story because I love this one. This is how Ed's mind works, and I kind of love it. The simplicity is often the simplest thing. And with Uber being a two-sided marketplace with drivers and riders, and you always had this equation of making sure you get the balance right.
That's
and at
right.
one point, you didn't have enough drivers to riders, and you tried all these means of marketing things. Tell me that.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in hindsight, it's now kind of obvious, but at the time we did not realize that we were actually more supply constrained than demand constrained in most of our markets. So the best way to grow was not to like get more riders, it was actually to recruit more drivers. Because what would happen when we didn't have enough drivers is surge pricing would kick in, prices would get higher, and fewer people would take rides. But as we added more and more drivers, then the prices stayed low and there was just more demand. And so we found that we were trying to figure out how do we get more drivers. We were running Craigslist ads and spending, marketing dollars, and we had a driver referral program. So we had all these different ways to try to attract drivers. And then we had this idea on the growth team, like, hey, what if we just add a little button in the rider app that says sign up to become a driver? And we just try to encourage all of our riders to become drivers. And literally overnight after we added that button, we started adding more new drivers per week than all of our paid marketing combined.
Wow.
Just from our rider base.
I love the simplicity of
it. Yeah, it was so simple. Yeah. It literally took the team less than a week to add that little button and sign up flow. And it was one of the most impactful things that we did during my 4 years at Uber. You know, it's kind of crazy to say that. But in hindsight, a lot of times it is the simplest tweaks that can have the biggest impact.
And I want one more story for you on Uber, and we'll keep moving on then. But then you signed up as a driver.
Yes.
And this is the behavioral psychology that I love. I love the above the shoulders stuff. It's like, okay, you get these people signing up to be drivers, but why aren't they taking rides?
Totally. And
so you did it yourself.
So yeah, this is a good reminder to what we call dog food your own product, like use your own product. And you can sometimes get these insights that you can't get just looking at the data, or that are very difficult to get just looking at the data. So one piece of data that we never understood was, why do only half of our drivers who actually sign up to become drivers, why do only half of them complete that first trip? Because, by the way, signing up to become a driver is not easy. You have to pass a get a vehicle inspection, pass a background check. You know, there's like a lot of work just to sign up.
You'd expect high conversion rate.
You'd expect, like, once someone's gone through all of that, they'll actually start at least do a few trips and see whether or not they like it.
Sure.
We found that half of the drivers who went through all those steps, half of them never did a single trip.
Wow.
And I didn't understand why until I signed up to become a driver myself. You know, the background check, vehicle inspection, it was like a bit of friction, but not too bad. But then when I walked out to my car to turn on the app to do my first trip as a driver, I started to get really nervous.
Really?
You know, and I was like, wait, should I play music when I pick them up? Like,
do I need water?
Do I need water? Do I talk to them? And do I use my, like, Google Maps to figure out where I'm going? What if I don't know how to get there? I wasn't even sure, like, do I just sit in my driveway and wait for, you know, a request? Or do I, like, drive into the downtown, and where do I wait? So there were all these questions in my mind that I suddenly realized, wait, this is why a lot of our drivers just give up at this point. We're not holding their hand and helping them understand how to do that first trip. So after that insight, we try to do more to make that first trip a very kind of welcoming experience that, you know, and we also experimented with, like, preferential dispatch for new drivers.
Did you end up giving any rides?
I did. Actually, I finally did.
I thought I knew you from
I turned off my car and walked back into my house. And then I said to myself, wait a second, if I can't do this, that's a really bad sign. So then I built up the courage to walk back out to my car, and I turned on the app and I started driving around until I got a request.
How many rides did you do?
I think I probably did, gosh, I don't remember exactly, maybe 20 trips.
All right.
Enough to get an experience for what it was like. Yeah. It actually was kind of a fun thing to do.
Did you have any that took you like 2 hours away? You're like,
fortunately, I didn't have any super long ones, but I did have, it's crazy just how different each experience is. Yeah. And the other thing that's kind of just funny as a driver is, like, I know I act this way as a rider too. You kind of assume the driver is like, you don't really care if they hear everything you're saying. So it's just amazing how much people
talk
in the back seat as if, like, okay, this person, I'll just talk about whatever I want. You know, I think Uber drivers probably, like, know a lot.
You turn back, maybe you should get some therapy.
I know, they probably understand people in ways that most people don't, because of how many things they hear.
That's hilarious. That's amazing, mate.
Yeah.
So Ed, your supply demand, you know, constraint.
Yeah.
You know, is that something that you've had to think about at both Facebook and at Whoop? Is that something that's
Good question. You know, at Facebook, it was just all about generating more demand. You know, I guess supply for Facebook would just be like, make sure we have enough servers so that the website works. Though, I guess now that I think about it, Facebook also, you know, network effects were a very important part of what made Facebook work. If you signed up for Facebook and didn't have any friends, the product, you can't use the product, right?
But wasn't it also the case, was it one of the Asian countries, might have been Japan, that requesting a friend was almost insulting in the cultural
thing? Good memory. So yes, we did find that in Japan, that was one of our slowest growing markets. And when we dug into the data and looked at the funnel, no one was sending invites to their friends. And that was a very important part of the registration flow, is like, hey, do you want to invite your friends to be on Facebook? When we dug into that, what we realized was it was like a culturally kind of an inappropriate thing to send invites. Mm. And what we did was we just tweaked the wording to call it an announcement. Mm. And we would then let Facebook announce to your friends that you're now on Facebook and this is where they can find you. And this is our country manager in Japan, you know, who kind of suggested we make that tweak. And when we made that change, it went from one of our slowest growing markets to one of our fastest growing ones.
I love those.
Again, it's just like a simple
thing. Right? Amazing how simplistic.
Yeah, the simplistic stories are really incredible.
So, you know, Facebook wasn't a two-sided marketplace, but having more friends did matter. And so one thing on growth we really focused on at Facebook was helping people get more friends. Mm-hmm. We found that if you got to 10 friends in the first week, you were much more likely to keep using Facebook than if you didn't. Mm. At Whoop, it's also, it doesn't have the same kind of supply-demand situation we had with Uber, though I guess our supply is just making sure we can manufacture enough of these devices so that we don't sell out. So we have an operations team that is making sure we have plenty of supply so that we can keep up with demand.
Mm-hmm. Do they ever constrain your growth?
Rarely, but it does. It has happened in the past. I think we're getting much better at getting ahead of that. Yeah. So, but there have been times, actually the one time that it did become an issue was during COVID when we had some issues with the supply chain. Mm-hmm. And for a period of time, we were actually like we had long shipping delays. Mm.
But people were more forgiving during that period to some degree,
You could say they were, but no. We saw that was like the one time in our history that I really remember like our growth really decreasing quite a bit during that period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it took us a bit of time to recover from that. Yeah.
Can I ask one more question? It might be a good segue into some of the other stuff. So as a growth officer, do you tend to think at Whoop more about selling devices or what people do once they buy the device, or how do you split that time?
You know, both of those things are super important. So when we think about growth, our North Star metric to measure growth is, we call it daily active members. So how many people are, you know, wearing this Whoop strap with a charge and calculating their sleep and recovery score each day, then you're counted as a daily active member. And so that's a number we're constantly trying to grow. And the two main ways to grow that metric are, well, one, get new members. Mm-hmm. So the more acquisition of new members we get around the world, the more that number goes up. But number two is we have to retain our existing members. Mm-hmm. We don't want them to churn.
What is the churn rate? Can you tell us that? We can edit it out.
I don't think we can share the exact numbers, but what I can say is it's improved a lot over the last year even with the launch of our latest hardware.
Yeah. Because improvements in the hardware.
Improvements in the hardware and the software.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're now on our fifth generation device, the Whoop 5.0 and MG. It has much longer battery life at over 14 days, which is quite a bit longer than our previous generation. So they're just, when you don't have to charge your device multiple times a week, then you're less likely to take it off and end up churning. Mm-hmm. So that matters. But then so do all the other features in the app. And we want to build an app that, we're actually one of the most engaging apps out there when we look at other consumer apps. I think second only to WhatsApp. On average, our members are opening the app 8 times per day.
Wow.
So once people start using Whoop, they keep using it.
What are they going to each day? What's the driver?
I think it's a lot of different things.
Because once you get your sleep score or your exercise.
Yes, there's some people that just look at it in the morning to look at their sleep score and their recovery score. But a lot of people will then also look at it after they exercise to kind of see like their different heart rate zones. I noticed my 15-year-old daughter is opening it up all the time. She likes to look at her stress monitor just to see like when is she like feeling more stress. And I found that that's something she's interested in. A lot of people open it up towards the end of the day to kind of look at their day in review and kind of begin their like bedtime routine. We have the Whoop AI health coach that a lot of people interact with where, you know, it's just this like 24/7 health coach that can, that you can talk with about anything really, that can help you better understand all of your metrics.
Mm-hmm. gosh, you guys are collecting a lot of data with all of this, yeah. right? I mean, it's all for your users. It's all hidden, and I assume people are safe to share their data.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's super important for us is data security and data privacy. Mm-hmm. You know, we never sell data or share data, you know, without a member's consent. It's one of the most important things is our member trust. And, you know, there are other companies out there that whose business model is advertising and they're in the, you know, business of selling data. Mm-hmm. And that's just not something we do.
So we skipped over the part where, you know, you exited Uber and then you became quite an investor. And that's why when you talk about Whoop and your involvement here, you were pretty early on, right? You and Will, the CEO, have known each other for a while and you've been involved here for a little while, right?
That's right. So after my time at Uber, I actually moved to the East Coast, to Boston with my wife and now four kids. And for a handful of years, I got into investing. Mm-hmm. And Whoop was one of the first companies I was introduced to by actually an early Whoop investor who also happened to be an early Uber investor. And his name's Eric Paley. When he met with me, he said, "Have you tried Whoop yet? I think you'd really like it." Because I was training for triathlons at the time. And he's like, "I think it could help with your training. It measures your HRV." And he's like, "I should introduce you to Will." And so he introduced me to Will, our founder and CEO. And I really, one, I loved the product. Two, I really enjoyed meeting Will. And I right away could tell, okay, this is like someone I would bet on.
Well, he's a Harvard grad, squash player, athlete himself. And what I've always loved about Whoop, Whoop seemed to focus on working with elite athletes and trying to work on performance a lot and then bring it back down to the general consumer.
That's right. He started the company 14 years ago from his dorm room at Harvard and was captain of the squash team. And you know, it's amazing that Whoop, their first 100 members, one of them was Michael Phelps and one of them was LeBron James. Wow. So from the very early days.
And that's when Phelps was at his...
So literally the best athletes in the world were some of our very first members. Yeah. It's crazy that he was able to convince in the very early days to try Whoop. Yeah. But I think that's a separate story. Yeah. And I think that's one thing too that's just always impresses me with Will is he's able to make these things happen, you know, that a lot of normal people wouldn't be able to.
But you're also somebody with your investing, just to segue back to that a little bit, you're a bit like the Warren Buffett. He's like, he doesn't invest in what he doesn't know. So when it comes to, I'm not calling you Warren Buffett by any means. Settle down.
No, I'm honored.
But you've invested in a lot of companies in the health and wellness space. You know, you've enjoyed working in that space because your background, we scanned overlap, but basically you ran at Harvard, but then you're also quite an exceptional triathlete, and I'm your hype man here. He just won the national cross country championships for his age this past year. So awesome. You know, you've done really well in sport.
Not at your level, Greg.
But you could have been, but you decided to go work with billion-dollar companies.
I'm grateful that it's through triathlon that I really connected with you originally.
We had a lot of fun building Any Question, which we've acquired about 3 years ago now.
That's right.
And then you came over and many of the team did.
Yeah, so that was kind of during my 5 years or so that I was investing. Mm-hmm. You know, just to finish the story with meeting Will, he ended up asking me to join the board of the company. I think this was almost 8 years ago now. And then I ended up investing as well. Mm. And then it was not long after that you and I met after I was listening to your podcast. I'd listened to your podcast on every long run I went on. It was like the most inspirational thing to listen to. And I finally reached out to you and convinced you to help me start Any Question, which was a little startup that we worked on for a couple of years and ended up selling to Whoop almost 3 years ago. Yeah. So that was how I then ended up here full time.
Yeah. No, that was a really fun time. And I think we both enjoyed that experience.
Yeah.
I want to talk about, we've talked a little bit about where Whoop is today and its consumers, its hard product.
Yeah.
I want to sort of just shift a little bit and where's Whoop looking to go? I know, you know, you've mentioned to me a few things. I'll let you take it from here, but I'm curious, where's Whoop going?
That was actually related to my question, which is what do you see as the biggest differentiator with all the other wearables?
That's a great question.
Great question. So, let's see, Whoop, when I first started using the product and when I first joined the board, it really was about, you know, a product I was using as an athlete to mm-hmm. try to become a better athlete. And I think that's how it was perceived by many, if not most, of our members back then. Mm-hmm. And it was a great tool for that, but I think a lot of people kind of felt like, oh, well, if I'm not an athlete, this isn't for me, you know? Mm-hmm. What's happened over the last year or so is Whoop is now much more about being a product that can help anyone who has a heart, mm-hmm. you know? And health is really the focus now more than fitness and athletics. Of course, fitness is a part of health, so mm-hmm. they're deeply connected. But, you know, if we think about where is Whoop going from here, our goal at the end of the day is to add more healthy years to the planet. Mm-hmm. And we have a longer-term aspirational goal of adding over 1 billion healthy years to the planet, which I do believe we can do. And the day we do that, I'm going to be even more proud, a lot more proud than I was the day we crossed 1 billion monthly active
users. How do you measure
Facebook.
That? You're yeah, going off
we've
what,
talked about this.
Yeah,
this
great really, question. So how do you measure it?
Yeah.
So Whoop has a measurement of your health span, which we call your Whoop age. And that's different from your chronological age. Mm-hmm. It's your kind of biological age. And it's based on 9 contributors. We worked with the Buck Institute, you know, who does a lot of longevity research mm-hmm. to come up with what are these 9 contributors and how can those contributors help determine what your biological age is or your health span. And these are things that include, I may not get all 9 of them here, but it's things like your sleep duration, mm-hmm. sleep consistency, time in heart rate zones 1 through 3, time in heart rate zones 4 and 5, number of steps, mm-hmm, strength mm-hmm. training time, and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So it's really related to, in many ways, your behavior and the other things that are results of your behavior. So VO2 max is another one, resting mm-hmm. heart rate's another one.
Blood pressure.
Blood pressure is not currently one of the 9 contributors,
yeah.
though we do have a blood pressure insights feature.
I wanted
in
to
Whoop.
Talk about that because I knew yeah. that just came out last year.
Yeah,
I was curious
yeah,
about
exactly.
that. Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, we have these 9 contributors. I think lean body mass, I think I may have actually hit all 9 now.
You've done pretty good. Yeah. So,
but we have this formula that takes all 9 of those and it then will basically give you a Whoop age. Mm-hmm. And it takes 3 weeks for a new Whoop member to unlock their Whoop age or their health span. And then every week we update it based on your behavior. Mm-hmm. So if you start exercising more and sleeping better, you know, both in terms of duration and consistency, mm-hmm. sleep consistency is one that I didn't realize how important that was until I started working here. Mm-hmm. But all of those behavior changes can help you improve your Whoop age. And so we have employees here who've like dropped their Whoop age by many years just because, you know, it's a gamification.
Yeah, yeah.
And like before we actually launched it to the real world, it was cool to just see some of our own employees like really changing their behavior.
How old are you? What's your Whoop age?
So I'm 31.
Look at you. Nice.
That's mostly due to my VO2 max. Yeah. That's by far the biggest contributor.
So now you keep track on the whole population, how many years that you've...
Exactly. Yeah. So we're able to look across our entire member base. What we do is we actually compare the Whoop age, the day it was unlocked for you on day 21 mm-hmm. versus the Whoop age today to see. It's not like the total, what we're not looking at is the total like delta versus your chronological age. It's the delta versus the day you first unlocked your health span.
Mm-hmm. I see. So do you find that you sort of see people as a population improve and then around Thanksgiving, yeah. Christmas, we, kind of takes a step back.
It's funny you say that. There is seasonality right. to the metric.
Okay.
Yeah.
People get older in the winter
okay.
and younger in the summer.
Okay.
So we're actually just 1 year into, we actually just last week hit our 1 year anniversary of launching Whoop 5.0 and MG and HealthSpan. So we now have 1 year's worth of data where we can start to see the seasonality.
Yeah. Okay. I think what I like about it is like we, you know, as a data science company, we explore data and David's team is, yeah. you know, some of the greatest data scientists in yeah. the world. But what I like about what you're doing here at Whoop is the simplicity of the action on top of the data, right?
So it's very complimentary. Like, we love to have the metrics ourselves. It's funny, like, ours are, our metrics are everything but the behavioral metrics, which are the biomarkers, and yours are the behavior.
So
it seems like very complimentary.
And they do work well together. And, you know, we now also offer something we call Advanced Labs, where you can go to a local Quest Diagnostics, get your blood drawn, and we will show you all of your biomarkers. And then we do tie that back to your health span contributors. And we can maybe show you, you know, if these certain biomarkers are off, that might actually be impacting your sleep duration and sleep consistency.
I'm curious if you got any specific examples of, like, a biomarker in a range that might improve or lower your whoopage.
Yeah. Well, so some of the biomarkers we've noticed that impact whoop age could be, like, cortisol levels. If those are elevated, that might be impacting your sleep. And so, and again, sleep is a very important contributor for health span. That's one example. I think iron levels can also impact your exercise. It's another one we look at. What's been interesting is when we've looked at all of our members that have taken these blood tests, about 2/3 of them have found biomarkers that are off in ways that can be addressed and should be addressed. Mm-hmm. So more often than not, if you take one of these blood tests, there's going to be, you're going to learn something that can actually be addressed to help you improve your health.
Does Whoop try to give interventions? Do you try to, like, what do you give as suggestions? Like, exercise, sleep, they're kind of the two front runners?
Those are, in terms of behavior change, those are the two big ones. Yeah. A lot of it, it's funny, almost regardless of the biomarker, it often does come back to sleep and exercise. Right. But for certain things, like, you know, whether it's iron levels, you know, there might be supplements you can take, or we also we give you a clinician reviewed report after you do your blood work.
Okay, so it
can give you the insights and kind of key actions we recommend that you take. Mm-hmm. We actually just announced this last week. We will be releasing next month the ability to connect with a doctor over the app. Mm-hmm. To talk about
telemedicine.
So video chat in the app with a physician.
And you'll contract those physicians, or
that's
they're
right.
Gonna be weeping. Okay, that's amazing.
That's through a partnership we have, and so you'll be able to talk to a doctor about your blood work, about your biometrics. You know, so if you have a lot of Whoop data, they'll have all of that data available to help them talk to you about whatever conditions you want to discuss with them.
And you guys have about, is it 2.5 million members today?
I'm not sure what we've publicly disclosed, but it's more than that.
More than that.
Yeah.
And can you share what your conversion of the blood test users have been?
So we're still working on getting more of our members to do blood tests. Mm-hmm. I think we announced that we had a wait list of over 250,000 people
when
we launched last October. And we have a bunch of people every month signing up to take them. We also just released other specialized panels. So we have our comprehensive panel, but then we also have specialized panels for women's health, for men's health, for performance health, heart health. And so there's several kind of specialized panels we offer.
I'm wondering if you've had similar findings that we've done, or if you've dug this deep in the markers where you can kind of tell the body type just from the blood work. Like, for example, like you take Barry, for example, and if you just look at his BMI, you might think that he's obese.
He's a specimen.
But actually the model can tell that it's muscular and it's healthy, and it can tell by the low insulin level and all these other high hemoglobin that he's athletic. So from the blood work, you can actually link that. I'm wondering if you all dug in to that extent.
Yeah, it's something we're still working on, but I think that is what we really want, to be able to link the biomarkers and your biometrics to really try to help people understand their bodies better. And those are actually just two of the inputs. We also last week announced we're going to be launching electronic health records integration, EHR. So that will be able to pull in all of your medical data to help we'll be able to give you even more personalized guidance. And there's several other things we're going to be doing, several other partnerships to just input more and more data about who you are so that so that Whoop can help coach you in the best way possible. You know, I was talking with our head of medical innovation here. We call him Dr. Dan, who's helped us come up with all these blood panels and biomarkers. And I was talking with him this morning and telling him I was going to be on this podcast. He's like, well, you should let them know that, you know, this is something, if you go to like your PCP and ask for a blood test like this, you can't get it done. Like, unless you have a special concierge program or longevity doctor, like, this is not a blood test that you can just walk in and
we've
get done.
We've noticed that on our
end. I'm sure you've seen the same thing.
The doctor won't order it, right? They just don't want to order extra things.
That's right. They'll start telling you reasons why they won't do it.
Even if you're willing to pay for it.
Even if you're willing to pay for it. Exactly. And then the other thing he said is, you know, one of the biomarkers we test for that he's just now daily sees people seeing this biomarker that's off is the lipoprotein A. And he kind of referred to this as like this, it's a certain type of cholesterol that often isn't picked up in normal tests. And people who have elevated levels of LPA, there's a higher probability that they'll have a heart attack. He said it often will happen like when you're in your 50s. And everything else can seem completely normal. But when people have those elevated levels, it's really important to address that because it just means you're so much more likely to get a heart attack if you do. And that can be for genetic reasons. It doesn't even necessarily have to do with your diet and exercise and sleep.
Yeah. How are you letting a consumer understand? I mean, you can talk to a telemedicine, but are they able to come on and go, is there anything within the software that is telling them, hey, you really should go talk to somebody? Are there warning signs?
Definitely.
You've got to manage that well, but I'm just curious.
We do. So we will have certain triggers in the app that will encourage our members to connect on for a telehealth visit, whether that's certain biomarkers that are off or if Whoop notices that you haven't been sleeping much, for example, it might say, hey, would you like to talk with a physician about this? So I think as we collect more and more data, anytime something looks off would be an opportunity to say, hey, we noticed that this metric is off. We actually have something called the health monitor in the app that you can look at every day, and just, it's kind of like the check engine light. Is everything good or is something off? Yeah. And anytime something's off is an opportunity to either talk with the Whoop AI health coach about it, or if you want to talk to an actual human physician, you can do so as well.
Yeah, for me, I like all that behavioral psychology, because how do you present that information without making somebody freak out, right? It's exactly. Like, how do you, even when wearables, you know, when Whoop, and I think you and I have discussed before, I was, you know, using Whoop and wearables and stuff like that, I was like, I don't want to know, you know, I don't want to be impacted by a bad score in the morning, that affects my brain, you know, and ever since, like, I actually enjoy it now. I like trying to predict what I've got.
But I remember you told me when you were racing competitively in the triathlon, you would like put your power meter and everything underneath the monitor underneath your bike seat or something. You never look at
it.
Didn't want to see the data.
I need the data later, but I don't want the data in front of me.
Not while you're working out.
I'm the opposite. I have to see it in real time.
I've become more of a real time more recently, but I think maybe it was the performance at the height. Yeah. I don't want to be told that I'm not. I don't want to be told I'm not amazing.
You're an outlier. I think you guys did a study on the efficacy of people monitoring their metrics and measurements and how much healthier they become as a result of that.
Oh yeah, it's amazing to see how people, once they become Whoop members, they start sleeping more, exercising more, their HRV increases. And we've done studies on what we do is we look at the data in their first month when they're just starting Whoop, and then several months later, and how does that compare?
That's cool.
And we see statistically significant increases in sleep, decreases in alcohol consumption, actually, is one of the biggest ones. and increases in HRV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you consider other wearables like always competitor or more complementary? Like, is there a benefit to somebody syncing and getting sleep data from, say, Oura and Garmin and Whoop, and you can put that together, or do you sort of see it as this independent ecosystem?
I mean, I think different people do wear different wearables, and a lot of them do track a lot of similar things like sleep and exercise. At Whoop, we are super focused on the accuracy of our metrics and our algorithms. And so that's something we believe with our wrist form factor and the sensors that we have in this device and the frequency with which we're measuring metrics, allow us to have more higher accuracy than a ring-based wearable, for example. I personally feel like it's better to wear a wearable than no wearable at all.
Yeah.
In my opinion, if you want the best, most accurate wearable, get a Whoop. But if,
I just wanted to see the readout on my watch, and I wanted a Garmin for that. But I could sync up to Whoop and be able to see all my stats and age and all that in the...
Totally. I mean, I admit I wore a Garmin when I went on a run this morning. And so I had a Garmin on one wrist and my Whoop on the other wrist, or I was actually wearing the Whoop bicep band for my run. I think there are reasons to wear more than one wearable.
Like for people who like to see progress. Like for me, it's actually not to push me to go harder, but to hold back.
Yeah.
Like I'll overtrain. If I don't see my heart rate and I know my zone four, my zone two.
That was a total flex, Dave.
I need like zone five.
I just tend to push too hard.
I want to get
there as fast as I can. So to me, it's a restrainer.
The first thing I look at every morning is my recovery score, my Whoop recovery score. And it's either green, yellow, or red. And if it's green, then I know today I can push it. You know, if I'm doing a workout, I can go extra hard. If I wake up and it's a red recovery score, I might take the day off. Okay. You know,
when you wake up, I like to do this, and we talked about it. I like to go, okay, well, what's my number going to be?
Right.
I like the predictive side.
I'm not sure
if you've added the gamification
yet
into the Whoop app, but I think you should. It's like the first little thing.
What do you think?
I'm like, it's 88.
Yeah.
92. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
or exactly. Even like this morning, I did not sleep well last night, although the hotel was quite lovely. I just didn't sleep well. And it actually said, you know, I was 85. I was like, so sometimes you go, I thought it was going to be more rubbish than it was, but maybe it's going to be okay.
Right.
Maybe today will be okay.
Yeah.
you mentioned the bicep band, which is important because when we tested wearables, we found for a workout, like no ring or anything on any watch, like was accurate in terms of getting your, I wear like a chest band. I've heard the bicep is accurate, so I assume it's for accuracy.
The bicep band is great for me personally when I'm running. I think for sleeping, I find I get very accurate heart rate data on my wrist. When I'm exercising, I find I get the most accurate data when I wear it as a bicep band.
That's consistent with our findings.
Yeah.
Like if you're at rest or sleeping, the band is fine.
That's right.
So we are going to try the Whoop. I haven't tried the Whoop bicep.
Yeah, try the Whoop bicep.
Do you know anyone at Whoop that can hook us up?
I think let's talk after the podcast.
Put him on the spot.
We'll go downstairs and hook you guys up.
No.
But we also are constantly improving all of our algorithms, including our heart rate algorithm. And we just, in the last month, released an update to our heart rate algorithm that increases accuracy like pretty significantly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always exciting when we can make those improvements.
And do you guys do all of that development internally, or do you have partnerships?
We do that work internally. Yeah, we have a lot of smart people here who are constantly working on improving our algorithms.
Where does the next, you know, I know we're coming up to time here, but where do you look at, you know, being somebody that's got a great expertise in growth, the next 5-10 years for Whoop, where do you see sort of the biggest opportunities?
Yeah, so I'm always thinking about what's next, and...
I mean, whatever you can disclose, by the way.
I think it comes back to that longer term North Star I mentioned mm-hmm. of adding more healthy years to the planet. Mm-hmm. And that really is what motivates me every day. And I think that's what motivates a lot of people here in the office every day. And that billion number I threw out there, it's not just a totally made up number. I actually think that over the next decade, and if we can accelerate things, maybe even over the next 5 years, I think we can get to a billion healthy years added to the planet.
It's very realistic, I think. I mean, it's kind of the number I would have chosen. Like, an active user, maybe getting 10 years times 100 million people.
Yeah, there are a couple different ways to do the math, whether it's 100 million people with 10 years or 200 million people with 5 years. But,
it's very doable.
We got our little mathematicians over here.
All the research we've done suggests that you can get
exactly
10 years.
So it's just a math formula. And as long as we keep growing, and our business is doubling every year right now. In fact, the bigger we get, the faster we're growing, which is kind of crazy. You don't normally see growth rates increase as you get bigger. Usually you see the opposite. Yeah. But it just shows how massive this market is.
Yeah.
So
I love how you said healthy years, and that's we say the same, because people think longevity is about just living longer, and they say, well, I don't want to be frail for longer, but really understanding a true longevity business like both of ours, it's about healthy
That's
living.
Right.
It's about high quality of life years.
It's the health span, not the lifespan.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so how do you actually measure that, though? If you're saying, Greg, you were going to be healthy to 78, how do we know that I was going to be 78, but now we're going to get me to 85 healthy years?
Yeah, so I mean, the way we currently show you that is through the WHOOP age.
That is the WHOOP age.
That is the WHOOP age.
That is the WHOOP age.
So I think the idea being like,
I got it. You touched
on that
before.
Your WHOOP age is 10 years younger than your chronological age.
We got you 10 years.
That basically got you 10 more healthy years versus what your chronological age would be.
And you did talk about that before. Yeah, well, David, is there anything more on the diet or biomarkers?
I mean, when I think of the biomarkers that are in common, most of ours are blood work. Most of yours are behavior, but I think there's some intersection, like resting heart rate is a predictor. We saw like a high resting heart rate can be as much as a 2x predictor of mortality. So that could be converted to sort of 8 years plus or minus on your biological age.
Yeah.
So there are some metrics that I think intersect.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One thing we didn't discuss is the blood pressure insights. Mm-hmm. But we have a feature in the app called Blood Pressure Insights, which shows you your blood pressure every day and how that's trending.
Is that just on one of the Whoop?
That's in Whoop Life. That's
the highest tier membership on
Whoop MG. Right.
Yeah. And that'll be huge if you know that accurately, because on our top 10 list for cardiac risk for someone who has never had a prior heart attack, it's number one. It's like in the top three.
It's
up there with cystatin C.
It's crazy how many people have high blood pressure, and that's another thing that people often don't realize they have high blood pressure.
Not to mention, even in addition to longevity indicator, it could pick up something like a sudden increase could be indicative where someone should go to the ER. So that could be big if you nail that down accurately.
That's right.
Some accuracy studies on that metric?
The team that's built that algorithm has looked at the accuracy of that versus,
actual cuff readings,
and it's highly accurate and becoming more and more accurate. Mm-hmm. And when we look at, we actually ask our members to calibrate with a cuff before activating that feature, and one interesting data point is that almost 50% of our members that do the cuff calibration have some form of high blood pressure. So there are a lot of people out there that have that high blood pressure
and
don't realize
feature.
It.
High being over 120 or over 130, which do you go by?
I'm going to have to double check that. I think it might be over 130.
Okay. I thought, we always measure our blood pressure at rest, and what would be interesting to me when that feature's out there would be like measuring it during a workout or walking around. Yeah. Like, does it sort of change in real time?
Yeah, that's a good question. We currently don't measure it during activity. The algorithm actually looks at your data while you're sleeping and then gives you a predictive score based on how you slept of what your resting blood pressure is likely to be that day. Morning.
Okay, so
you guys probably had to do a lot of trial and error with that, because you probably have experience how even if you raise your arm a little bit, you know, your feet flat. There's all kinds of nuances to accurate measurement of your
blood pressure. Yeah, so there was a protocol when we actually ran the study to collect all of the data, the training data, which involved, you know, fasting and taking your blood pressure in the morning and right after you haven't done any activities or anything like that. So we tried to keep all of that consistent.
Yeah. I was talking to a mate at karate, and we're going to wrap up here, but he was, he said, oh, yeah. I said,
you don't do karate, just for the record.
Oh, sorry, my kids are doing karate. I'm just the audience.
All right.
But he was like, actually, he's friends of Sean, the owner of the business, and they own all the old people's homes all around the country, and they're putting Whoops on all of them, and they've just ordered thousands and thousands of them.
Oh, wow.
Like that. So I don't know what kind of contract, but it was fascinating to hear. And they're not putting it on the staff, they're putting it on the people that are in the home so they can keep measuring them.
Really?
Yeah, so I don't know if that's been a driving force of where you're aiming to grow Whoop, but I thought I'd share that with you because I thought that was pretty
awesome.
It's
like the other side of the spectrum, the old people's homes versus the
young I mean, you've got Roy McIlroy and Sabalenka and Phelps, and then you have actually, Whoop is now making its way into these kind of homes, and they're saying that they can monitor their patients and stuff. I was like, I don't know if you knew that, mate.
I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
This has been amazing.
It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, really appreciate it, mate.
Great to have you
really
all in town. I appreciate you flying up from Florida.
Yeah, of course.
Our pleasure.
Look at us in Whoop headquarters. Yeah. This is really cool. So thanks for organizing. Thanks for helping us. And just sharing all that knowledge is just absolutely amazing, mate. And congrats again. Your entire journey is amazing.
Thank you, Greg. And I appreciate the role you played in it and are continuing to play in it. And, you know, more importantly, the friendship that we've had over these years really means a lot to me.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks.
Cool.